program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Welcome to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show has to do with HIPAA-compliant wireless, so otherwise known as Wi-Fi, and what you need to know about it. And the interesting thing is that this isn't just about HIPAA compliancy. I think you can really take this element of the HIPAA-compliant Wi-Fi into all kinds of other realms. And then I've got to talk to you about the latest and greatest functionality that has been implemented in the Trend Worry-Free Business Security Services, why it's a superior product and what it does exactly for you because of all of the ransomware. In fact, I had recently talked to somebody out in New York who was breached by some ransomware. And they were basically breached because they did not have full defense in depth in place. And if I have time, I'll get to the cybersecurity kill chain, which is the next level of defense in depth. And if I get a little short on time on that topic, I'll cover it in the next show. So let's start off with HIPAA-compliant Wi-Fi and what you need to know about that. So first, why do we care about securing wireless for HIPAA environments? Well, it's primarily because we just don't want the data to be leaked. We want our computer systems to continue to work. And clearly, if you allow bad things to get into a medical environment, that can actually lead to people being dead. I mean, imagine a heart machine or some piece of surgical equipment, maybe a laser machine, a CT scanner, any number of things. Insulin pumps have been well known to be hacked. If there are any of these pieces of equipment that are getting hacked, just to the point where it could be something as simple as a meter that is misreading intentionally 100 points up or down, and then that's going to indicate to the medical personnel that, say, your insulin levels are significantly off 100 points more than they really are, then you could be getting a different dosage of insulin that might actually kill you. So the HIPAA environments are pretty high-stakes games. Now, even if we look at it past this element of people could die, which is pretty serious, and we look at it just at the value, the financial value of the medical records, the personally identifiable information and medical records associated with, this is really called PHI, personal health information, or the protected health information. The PHI is worth about 50 times more on the dark net than, the underground internet, than PII. And just as of yesterday, four major organizations were breached, one of them being Experian, to the tune of tens of millions of T-Mobile subscribers had all their PII breached associated with the Experian hack. So if basically you're breathing on this planet, you've probably been hacked at this point in time. I mean, that's really the realm that we're in. If you have any sort of an identity at this point that is digital stored anywhere, whether or not you're interacting with the internet, I mean, this is now the element of it really just doesn't matter what you do, your data has been breached. The ubiquitous nature of breached data has driven down the cost of PII on darknet. But what there is not an extreme quantity of at this point is PHI. Now, the other thing is, you'd have to really work at it something fierce to get a different Social Security number. But so your Social Security number is something that you really should protect. You can get a different credit card number. You can do things like fraud alerts on your Social Security number with regards to the three credit reporting bureaus and that, which is absolutely something you should do. But you can't get a new medical record. And it becomes very, 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 very extensively difficult to try to correct issues in your medical record. So if somebody steals your medical identity and then they go out and utilize that for procedures so that they can get insurance coverage, well, there's somebody now that has this record that you received that care. Therefore, they think that you had that medical condition. And trying to unwind that, I have yet to hear of anybody that's actually been able to successfully unwind that. The amount of time that it would take to do that is just unfathomable. So you can imagine that there's a whole number of elements here where PHI getting breached is an astronomical problem. And it's really not that hard to protect it. And I find it just abysmally unacceptable that most medical offices and, frankly, a lot of hospitals just do not have their ducks in a row with regards to protecting PHI and PII in general. There's a lot of techniques that can be used out there, and I think it's a matter of just organizations having the intestinal fortitude and the will to take control of the situation and say, well, we're going to proactively spend money in order to, you know, when we have it, we're going to proactively spend money to close these security gaps as opposed to trying to skirt by and wait till they're breached and then do some sort of a response pattern. Because as soon as you're breached, you no longer control the cost profile of that circumstance, of that situation. The bad guys have now taken full control over the cost profile of that, so you really seriously need to think about being proactive about this stuff. Okay, so let's take a look at what is really all about this HIPAA-compliant Wi-Fi. Specifically, this has to do with the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR Title 45, Part 164, Subpart C. Yay! I'll say that again. CFR, so Code of Federal Regulations, Title 45, Part 164, Subpart C. And this splits wireless LAN requirements into three categories. It processes it into administrative policies, so processes and policies, the physical hardware requirements, and then the technical techniques utilized to secure the wireless LAN traffic. So in terms of administrative requirements, the specifications say that there have to be logs that collect administrators' log on and log off events. Now this has to do with people who administratively have admin access over the wireless LAN equipment. So you need logging. So, therefore, that right there says you cannot use individualized wireless access points that are standalone. You have to have a centralized gateway controller, and it has to log, and that log data has to go back into a SIM logging server. That's what that means. Now, if we just move on to step two here, they list, use a wireless LAN solution with centralized management, a centralized controller, so that the administrator account passwords are maintained in one system. Yes! Oh, there's another one. It is required to use a centralized gateway wireless controller because if you have an administrator who leaves the organization, then in one place the password for all of those connected, it's really like a session negotiation sort of relationship between the wireless access point and the gateway wireless controller. And it uses more than just a password to authenticate. But when you have an admin that leaves your organization, you need to have a standard protocol that is to very rapidly go around and change passwords on all of the stuff. And if, let's say, you have just 20 wireless access points, which is not an unusual number of access points. I mean, a typical office is going to have like four, typically. And that's a very small office. It's not hard to get to 20. But even in this case of four, your option would be, okay, manually log into each one of these wireless access points and change the password. Versus if you had the gateway wireless controller, you would just go in there and change it in one place, and it would replicate out the settings. And the number four on this, Actually, three on this list is use a wireless LAN solution with detection of wireless security threats, such as rogue access points. Now, what it is not going into here is it's not talking about literally access control lists, application control, gateway antivirus, unified threat management in general being extended to the wireless layer. And that is most definitely a necessary component of just good network design and most especially good wireless design. I mean, if you take the presumption that your wireless network is inherently less secure than your cabled network, which is most definitely a good strategy to take, then you need to do things such as intra-VLAN UTM, Unified Threat Management, so intra-VLAN traffic analysis. Now, if you're going to turn on intra-VLAN UTM inspection, you got to have the horsepower to do that. This isn't just something, well, and frankly, there's the vast majority of products on the market out there can't even do that. WatchGuard Fireboxes do happen to be able to do that. And now, of course, one thing that most gateway wireless controller solutions do is they do have the ability to do what's called station isolation and client isolation, but that is only effective in a situation where you're talking about a guest network. That doesn't do you any good on the trusted wireless. So you still need to have sanitization and effectively network layer security when you're talking about a medical wireless device that needs to talk back to a server for whatever that functionality is that thing does. So inherently, you can't do client access isolation on that device because it needs to actually go back and talk to a server. It's not talking exclusively just to the internet. Now, the rogue access points is really important that this detection, and of course then some sort of a notification system that drives notification to the administrators is absolutely required that that's a piece of functionality. If you don't have rogue access point detection, what can happen is some bad guy can come along and they can put up a rogue access point with the same SSID that you have. And let's just say they've sniffed the traffic and they have identified enough packets, and maybe you weren't using as secure of an encryption protocol as you should have been. So they have figured out what the passphrase is. So they know the SSID, and they know the passphrase. Now they can put up a rogue access point that can even spoof the MAC address of your wireless access point. And of course, your machine is going to connect to it automatically because that rogue access point has the correct SSID and passphrase in it. Well, now your medical equipment is trying to talk to, or your just PCs in the medical office in general, or laptops are going to be trying to talk to this rogue access point, so therefore they're going to be trying to transmit data, and that data is then going to be sniffed and stolen, etc. So this is why rogue access points have to be, this is not optional, they have to be inspected and analyzed. You have to have a mechanism to track this stuff. This is why you also have to have a centralized SIM logging server, and you have to have somebody who is at least my level of skill looking at that data on a regular basis. Now, step number four says make a backup of your wireless LAN configuration from the gateway wireless controller and store it safely off-site in case of an emergency. I'm not really sure what they're trying to do with that because I don't know what they're trying to do with that. I mean, in the case of a disaster, you could just make an argument that it would just be easy enough to just reconfigure it from scratch. I mean, in general, your gateway wireless controller, you're already going to have a backup of that configuration. And yes, you would already be storing that configuration off-site. So maybe this is just one of those things where, duh, it's obvious you would have already been doing all of that, so I'm not entirely sure why they felt like they had to add it there, except that maybe some people don't understand appropriate disaster avoidance and recovery strategy. All right, so number five, use a wireless LAN solution that allows healthcare staff to remain connected to patient information if the internet or a central controller is unavailable to the access points. Now, this is really a big deal. There's a lot of products on the market that do not use an on-premise centralized gateway wireless controller. They use cloud controllers. And cloud controllers basically mean it's not a gateway wireless controller solution that is on-premise. It is hosted someplace. In the case that it's hosted someplace, the question you have to ask yourself is, under what circumstances is the loss of connectivity to that gateway wireless controller from the access points themselves, is that going to impede the functionality of the access points? In most circumstances, I would say yes, it would impede. You need to consider a situation where your internet connection is going down. And, maybe there was a high stratospheric nuclear EMP blast, and it took out a chunk of the grid. Now, that means that the redundant internet connections that the hospital had is no longer there. But what they do have is maybe they've still got their hardened equipment that's on-premise. So maybe their wireless network is actually still working, but they don't have an internet connection because their upstream internet connection capabilities were destroyed someplace geographically elsewhere. So maybe the two ISPs were taken out, but the hospital's still up. Well, in that circumstance, I'm not going to say that the gateway wireless controller or lack of connectivity to it is going to instantaneously cause a problem, but the question is, over what period of time is that going to cause a problem? Is it an hour? Is it 4 hours? Is it 8 hours? For the cost of the gateway wireless controller to put the thing on-premise, I really just would not mess around. Why would I introduce another single point of failure and into the gateway wireless controller solution and the overall wireless solution in general? Why would I do that? So I prefer the on-premise gateway wireless controller for just common sense purposes, as well as it meets item number five of the administrative requirements of the HIPAA-compliant wireless. So let's talk about physical requirements, which is the next section that they cover. They talk about using access points that offer protection from physical tampering. So there are some access points that have really... You can, use a Kensington lock on them and make sure that nobody's running off with them and stealing them. That's all great. But that is not what they're talking about with regards to tamper protection. So tamper protection is a totally different level of access point, where it's literally got a metal bracket that would attach to the back, typically. And that metal bracket is going to protect the access to the physical cable connections. So if you have one or two network cables going to that wireless access point, then this metal bracket that clamps onto the wireless access point, and then when you use a Kensington lock on that, that is now making it absolutely impossible to put any sort of a device between the wireless access point and the end of that network cable. Imagine a situation where somebody came along and they had physical access to that access point. It is conceivable that they could put an intermediary device in between the network cable that came from the data center and into the access point. So they could plug something in there and sniff all the traffic that's going there. So, that's totally conceivable. It's possible to do that when physical access to interrupt that physical copper line is able to be had. Well, one way to mitigate that is you use wireless access points that have this metal plate that when you plug in the network cables into the back of the access point, it locks down access to that. And this gets even better because there are some wireless access points that this metal bracket also has the ability to, like, lock onto your typical drop ceiling tile framing pieces. And then when you put a Kensington lock on that, I mean, the whole thing is, like, locked on there like a bandit. You're not getting it off. And that, you know, that's the whole point, right? It's this level of physical security. But it's really important that you understand that that's actually one of the legitimate requirements for HIPAA-compliant Wi-Fi, because you need to protect it from physical tampering. If you don't protect it from physical tampering, well, you know, somebody could interrupt it. But in a circumstance where you have not already protected the access to the physical network jacks in the medical facility, then, I mean, somebody's going to go after that. That's lower hanging fruit than going after a wireless access point connection anyways. So realize that just simply securing your wireless access points is not by itself a comprehensive strategy with regards to physical access security for networks. Now, if you are owning a medical office, or if you're a decision maker for a medical facility, then you really should also know that you're going to have to buy more expensive wireless access points. Either that, or they have to be up in a ceiling recessed where they are not visible and you're offering some other layer of physical security to them, and you would still have to lock them down with a Kensington lock so that they're not walking away anyhow. So they're more expensive. Item number two with regards to physical requirements is, it says, store any on-site wireless LAN controller equipment behind an access-restricted area. Yeah, well, the obvious point there is, if you have physical access to something, whatever it is, you can generally make the claim that you own it. So I was just talking yesterday to a team out in the West Coast, and we were talking about one of their locations that's in Mountain Time. And we were talking about various functionalities that they had and such. And I said, well, you could do, you could put a server there, right? You could put additional network equipment there at that location. And I said to them, this would provide you a lot of benefit, but if you cannot guarantee that you have a fully access-restricted, lockable, secured location that you're also going to commit to putting a surveillance camera in so that you can monitor it remotely, then you can't put a server there. And, you know, so this is one of those things. I don't care what it is. You really need to be controlling physical access to it. That means it's in a locked cabinet, preferably in a locked room, or it's at least in a locked room. With regards to the wireless LAN controller, well, that obviously should be in a locked cabinet because it's a piece of network equipment. All right, now let's get on to technical requirements, and then this should probably wrap up the show. And so I'll talk about the cybersecurity kill chain in the next show. If you offer public-facing wireless access, you have to separate this traffic from your internal electronic health record network using separate SSIDs and VLAN IDs. Well, obviously, I'm absolutely astonished that this actually has to be part of the technical requirements. This would be just, I mean, standard SOP for any sort of a wireless network is you would literally do network layer, I mean, hard network layer separation between the guest wireless and the EHR wireless. But that being said, I mean, it astonishes me that this isn't just completely on obvious to everyone. However, that being said, I would say it was about 9 months ago that I had a medical office in the Kenosha area call me up, and I went over there to do a little audit, and you know, they thought I could help them, and I could help them, but turns out they didn't really want help, and they were doing all kinds of interesting, crazy things, such as allowing the patients and the patient's children and, you know, the patient's family members and guests, like, you know, medical equipment representatives, salespeople, and so forth. I mean, I don't care who it was. When they came into the office, they were given the wireless SSID and the password, and the security on that was not even remotely close to being acceptable. And that was the same wireless that allowed connectivity, you know, to the EHR system, the system that where the practice management database was. So if you were on that wireless, if you were connected to that wireless, it would be a, you know, simple child's play to sit there and sniff the traffic associated with the practice management database and certainly any insurance claim submittals and things like that. So I guess it's a good thing that they actually put, you know, that the government put this on their list of required functionalities for HIPAA compliant Wi-Fi, because even I myself have seen local businesses not having adequate security. I mean, even things that astonish me that I think are just so obvious and they're so egregious that I would never in 100,000 years set up a network that way. Yep, I've seen it though. People do it, and then when I talk to them and I tell them, well, you know, you can't do that, they're like, well, that costs too much money. We don't want to change the configuration. And then I say, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I'm not going to be party to you not protecting your patient's data. And I have to walk away. I mean, that's all I can do with that. So, you know, I try my best to educate people. So that should be obvious. You have to separate the EHR network from the guest wireless. The next item under the technical requirements, they say here, at a minimum, you have to use WPA2 with PSK encryption. So that also means AES. What they didn't specify was AES, but they really should have specified AES because TKIP is a weaker encryption protocol. And they're saying in a better scenario, implement WPA2 Enterprise with client-side certificate security protection using 802.1x. And that is called Radius Authentication, in case you were wondering. But this is where you take your trusted devices and they have certificates, meaning you have to actually have a certificate infrastructure. This is not something you just whip out of the back pocket. But it is most definitely doable. It costs money to do it. But once it's in place, it's pretty stable and reliable and low maintenance. Item number three, which is the final item of the technical requirements, they're talking about using a wireless LAN solution that provides visibility into wireless client activity such as bandwidth consumption, source and destination information, and this wireless LAN solution needs to have the ability to selectively block any traffic. Okay, this is the big matzo ball. It is the same strategy that I've had with networks for the last 15 years, which is you don't know what in the world is going on that network unless you have full visibility into it. Therefore, your network must be constructed such that you have a unified threat management device, a full perimeter security appliance that is also functioning as your core router that is going to give you centralized visibility into every packet and centralized access control list capabilities into every single packet. And all of that has to go back to a SIM logging server. I mean, for me, this is standard operating protocol. But yet every day, I'm seeing that other consultants are not doing it that way. So it would behoove you to become aware of what these baseline requirements are so that you can evaluate other consultants' implementation services appropriately and say, is the solution that you're offering here meeting the minimum requirements that I am going to be held to as a medical office in order to be compliant? And if they're not, well, then it would be prudent for you to try and find consulting services elsewhere from somebody that's actually going to implement something for you that's considered to be adherent to IT security standards and best practices. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please do send me an email with your questions and comments.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Support comes from the Kenosha Symphony, launching a new season Saturday, October 17th with a Frank Sinatra.